Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
I'm going to try something a little different this morning. I recently read a book called In Paradise, which was fiction. It was written by Peter Matheson, and it was based on Glassman's retreats to Auschwitz. He created the experience through various characters who wound up there. So I had forgotten what a beautiful writer he is. He died last year. I think he was 86, and he died of leukemia. So I'm going to read just a brief description from this book, and I'll tell you a little bit more. Peter Matheson was born in New York City in 1927 and had already begun his writing career by the time he graduated from Yale University in 1950. The following year, he was the founder of the Paris Review. His career as a naturalist and explorer has resulted in numerous widely acclaimed books of nonfiction, among them The Tree Where Man Was Born, which was nominated for the National Book Award, and The Snow Leopard, which won it. Mr. Matheson is also an acclaimed novelist, whose works include At Play in the Fields of the Lord, which was nominated for the National Book Award, and 8 other works of fiction. Has anybody ever heard of Peter Matheson? Okay. So, just to add something to that description, I don't remember in history when this was, but Matheson had gone away on a 4-month trek. He was married. It was his second marriage to Deborah Matheson. And he had gone away on a 4-month trek. And while he was gone, Deborah, his wife, got involved with Zen. And remember, they lived in New York, and he wound up going to the Zen Studies Society in New York and began sitting with Eido Roshi. And then also Soen Roshi, who was there. And the two of them actually were a couple of the first teachers to bring Zen to America. So eventually his trek was over and he came home, and as he was going up the driveway, there were 3 Japanese men dressed in robes. And this contact began his entry into a Zen practice of his own. Apparently, while he was gone, as I said, Deborah had taken up Zen practice. So eventually, he started sitting with her and going on retreats together. And so he became a Zen student in addition to being a writer, and ultimately received Dharma transmission from Bernie Glassman. And so when he died, he was Roshi Matheson. So because I was so touched by the book In Paradise, I went on Amazon to see what else was available from him. In any case, there is a relatively new book, which is a collection of his nonfiction. This is the cover of the book. He's sitting there with a tiger, baby tiger. And so it's a collection of a variety of works. And many, many years ago, when I first got into Zen practice, maybe even before officially I had started meditating, I read The Snow Leopard. And, I read it with a certain level of understanding, which was related to, I was 20-something years old and had an interest in all this stuff. But, at that point was really more interested in the philosophy of Zen as opposed to the experience of Zen. So in this compendium of excerpts from different books, there's one on The Snow Leopard. And The Snow Leopard is nonfiction, as I said, which chronicles a 250-mile trek that he and another guy named George Schaller, who's also a naturalist, 250-mile trek they made across the Himalayas. But much of the story takes place on Crystal Mountain, which is in a particularly remote and inhospitable place in Tibet, in the mountains, in the Himalayas. Now, there's sort of a backdrop which lends another dimension to this story, and that is not too long before he went on this trek, his wife Deborah died of cancer. And so this trek was more than just the trek of a naturalist looking for the snow leopard, which can be found in the Himalayas. But he was really, this was a spiritual journey to look into the meaning of life and to grieve the loss of his wife, who he was very close to. So what I'm going to do, well, let me just say this first. You know, spiritual experiences really defy words. But in this book, Matheson describes his spiritual experience with beautifully crafted prose, which transcends the old statement, the finger pointing at the moon. It stirs some ancient physical memory of what transcendent reality is. So that was the thing that caught me about this book and reading it, was he has such an ability to write about these things, these matters of Zen, these matters of spirituality, that almost literally transcend a direct experience, or equal a direct experience, I guess I would say. So, with your indulgence, I'm going to read some of the sections that I found most beautiful. And what I'm going to do is, some of them are pretty long, but then I'm going to have us all sit together for a few minutes with just the word, the first words, the second words, and so forth. So he writes, "Now the mountains all around me take on life. The crystal mountain moves. Soon there comes the murmur of the torrent from far below under the ice. It seems impossible that I can hear it. Even windlessness, the sound of rivers comes and goes and falls and rises, like the wind itself. An instinct comes to open outward by letting all life in, just as a flower fills with sun, to burst forth from this old husk and cast one's energy abroad to fly. Although I am not conscious of emotion, the mind opening brings a soft mist to my eyes. Then the mist passes, and the cold wind clears my head, and body-mind comes and goes on the light air, a sun-filled Buddha. One day I shall meditate in the falling snow. I lower my gaze from the snow peaks to the glistening thorns, the snow patches, the lichens. Though I am blind to it, the truth is near, in the reality of what I sit on, rocks. These hard rocks instruct my bones in what my brain could never grasp in the Heart Sutra, that form is emptiness and emptiness is form, the void. The emptiness of blue-black space contained in everything. Sometimes when I meditate, the big rocks dance. The secret of the mountains is that the mountains simply exist as I do myself. The mountains exist simply, which I do not. The mountains have no meaning. They are meaning. The mountains are. The sun is round, I ring with life, and the mountains ring, and when I hear it, there is a ringing that we share. I understand all this, not in my mind, but in my heart, knowing how meaningless it is to try to capture what cannot be expressed, knowing that mere words will remain when I read it all again another day." In the east, at dark, bright Mars appears, and soon the full moon follows the sun's path, east to west, across a blue-black sky. I am always restless in the time of the full moon, a common lunatic, and move about the frozen monastery moon-watching. Rising over the White River, the moon illuminates the ghostly prayer flag blowing so softly on the roof of the still hut, and seems to kindle the stacked brushwood. On its altar stone, my small clay Buddha stirs. The snow across the river glows, and the rocks and peaks, the serpentine black stream, the snows, the sky, stars, the firmament, all ring like the bell of Georgia Chang. Now, here is the secret. Now. The ground whirls with its own energy, not in an alarming way, but in slow spiral. And at these altitudes, in this vast space and silence, the energy pours through me, joining my body with the sun, until silver breaths of cold, clean air, no longer mine, are lost in the mineral breathing of the mountain. A white down feather, sun-filled, dances before me on the wind, alighting nowhere. It balances on a shining thorn and goes spinning on. Between this white feather, sheep dung, light, and the fleeting aggregate of atoms that is I, there is no particle of difference. There is a mountain opposite, but this I is opposite nothing, opposed to nothing. Also, I love the common miracles, the murmur of my friends at evening, the clay fires of smudgy juniper, the coarse, dull food, the hardships and simplicity, the contentment of doing one thing at a time. When I take my blue tin cup into my hand, that is all that I do. We have had no news of modern times since late September, and will have none until December. And gradually my mind has cleared itself, and wind and sun pour through my head as through a bell. Though we talk little here, I am never lonely. I am returned to myself. Having got here at last, I do not wish to leave the Crystal Mountain. I am in pain about it, truly, so much so that I have to smile, or I might weep. I think of Deborah, and how she would smile too. In another life, this isn't what I know, but how I feel. These mountains were my home. There is a rising of forgotten knowledge, like a spring hidden from aquifers under the earth. To glimpse one's own true nature is a kind of home-going, to a place east of the sun, west of the moon, the home-going that needs no home. Like the waterfall on the upper Suli Ghat that turns to mist before touching the earth, and rises once again into the sky. So the last one. Soon the mountains stir, then shift and vibrate. How vital these rocks seem against the blue sky. If only they would fly apart, consume us in a fire of white light. But I am not ready, and I resist, in fear of losing my death grip on the world, on all that provides the illusion of security. So those are words that come as close as I've ever experienced to relating the true nature of reality. So I'm going to share some words from Ryokan, which can bring us back to earth. Zen poet Ryokan wrote of a glad willingness to exchange the most magnificent metaphor about the sea for the immediacy, the pure reality, of one splash of cold surf full in the face. Thank you.